Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
You're listening to the Sherlock's Podcast, your guide to a more stylish life.
Welcome to this week's In Conversation podcast with me, Charlotte Collins. Today I'm joined by Natasha Sedaris. Natasha is the founder and CEO of Tasha's Group, a casual dining concept that started life in South Africa in 2005, but has since expanded into the UAE, where Natasha now lives. A passionate businesswoman and third-generation hospitality entrepreneur, she joins me today to talk about where it all started, what comes next, and the lessons she's learned along the way. Welcome.
Oh, thank you for having me.
I feel like I should preface this by saying this came about because Georgie, our founder, was out in Dubai, came to one of your restaurants.
Bungalow 34.
Bungalow 34. And basically came back, like raving in a way I've never heard her rave about anyone before.
Thank you.
Just saying what a fabulous concept it was, how incredible, I mean, every part of it, the design, the food, and how impressed she was by you. So
it was very nice to meet her.
Here we are.
I'm glad she enjoyed her evening.
We should also say you are soon to open a restaurant in Battersea Power Station.
We are soon to open a restaurant in Battersea Power Station. The nerves are at an all-time high.
When did
Super nervous, even though we've got 35 restaurants. I mean, everyone is nerve-wracking. This one is especially nerve-wracking.
Why is that?
I think the UK is a very competitive market. And in addition to that, I think there are massive barriers to entry. Mm-hmm. When we moved out of South Africa to open our first international restaurant, we were looking at the UK and I got scared. I'm still a bit frightened. Mm-hmm. I think the major staff issues, rentals are high. Mm-hmm. You know, we're lucky with food. I think you guys have got amazing produce, so that's not an issue. But mainly the issues around labor costs, mm-hmm. and the rentals being as high as they are. And it's very competitive. This is a foodie capital. So I am nervous. Doesn't matter that I've opened 40. I'm still very nervous. I mean, opening on Tuesday, so...
Oh, right. Okay, yeah. It's literally very imminent.
Exactly.
Okay. Why did you, despite those factors, yeah. Why have you still decided to open?
So we've been in Dubai for the last 10 years, mm-hmm. and I think that we have cut our teeth in Dubai. We really have been able to export the business out of South Africa into an international platform. Dubai is also super competitive. Mm-hmm. And we have got, I think, 14 restaurants in the Middle East. I think we have got a little bit of confidence now to say, okay, let's try and tackle London. Mm. No major plans. Initially, we started looking at a couple of sites and I just told the guys, enough. Stop looking at more locations. Let's open the first one. Mm. Give great service, good food, build a stunning interior. Let's get the ambience right. Make sure people love the product. If it works, and please God it does, then we'll start looking at other locations. So we're going to take it nice and slow.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. No grand plans, just
okay, so dipping your toe in. I want to know more about London, but let's go back several steps.
Sure.
Can you tell us a bit about your story? Why hospitality and kind of how you started?
So initially, I didn't want to get involved in hospitality. My dad was a restaurateur and a chef, and I had watched him working long, hard hours, and we'd hardly see each other. I mean, those days, restaurants used to close on a Monday. That was the day we'd see my dad, and we'd do a back-to-back movies in the afternoon. So I said, I'm definitely not going to get involved in the hospitality business. And I studied psychology. And my dad was opening a restaurant called Fishmonger. And he said, come and do a couple of shifts. Should have known then not to have agreed. Needed some extra cash as a student and went and helped. And I think hospitality is something that when it gets under your blood, I've been fortunate enough to work in very busy restaurants my whole life. And it was a super successful restaurant. And I think the adrenaline of working in that type of environment, I love people. It's the reason I went to study psychology as well. So the combination of the people, a love of food. I'm Greek, so born in South Africa, but Greek. So both grandparents, big foodies, you know, around food all the time, cooking amazing food. Then I just think the high energy of the place and being able to connect with humans on a daily basis in a very real way from a customer point of view and a staff point of view. Mm-hmm. The story goes, university during the day, apron in the back of the car, drive to the restaurant, put the apron on. And work. And that's how I started in the food business. Opened a couple of fishmongers with my father. Then I said, no, I'm not going to do this anymore. It's really tough. Took a small break and continued the journey. And I opened my first Tasha's 18 years ago. So it's a well-established business, 18 years old. And I feel like we've just started.
Do you really?
Well, especially with the opening in Battersea.
Mm.
You know, as I said, the nerves are at an all-time high. Mm. Everything feels brand new. Who are the suppliers? Where are we going to get stuff from? The challenges around the staff are massive.
Mm-hmm.
So it feels like just starting the journey again.
So you, what, the bug was there and you just felt?
Once you get involved in the food industry and you fall in love with it, it is almost impossible to get out of it. So it's a word of caution for anyone out there who wants to dip their toe in. Just be careful because it gets under your skin and that's it, you're hooked.
And is it the people? Is it just the people that keeps you in?
Listen,
what is it?
I've got a love of interiors as well. Mm-hmm. And I suppose if I wasn't in the food industry, my second job would have been interior design or architecture. I've always loved it. My mom was extremely creative in that way. Being in hospitality at my level, I get to do all of the things that I love. So I'm very involved with the interiors. I'm extremely involved with the food. So nothing goes onto the menu unless I've worked with it or with the chefs, tasted it. You know, we really work the menus together. And then I get to work with people and serve customers. Mm. You know, I'm lucky. I get to do what I love.
It's the Holy Trinity.
It is the
passions.
Holy Trinity. Yeah.
So you opened your first Tashas.
So I opened my first Tashas 18 years ago.
And what was the ethos behind that?
So in South Africa, there was a whole lot of mass restaurants. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about big franchises and mass type of food. And then themed restaurants. So one or two very high-end Italian, a Portuguese restaurant, an Asian restaurant. And there was really nothing in between 18 years ago in South Africa. And I had done a trip to Australia. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to try and open a cafe-style restaurant that is uber stylish, but it's accessible. And I think that's a key with Tashas. It is an accessible brand. You still feel like it's a little bit indulgent and you do feel special, but it is really accessible. It's exclusive, but it doesn't exclude. And that's how Tashas came about. And I didn't want to call it Tashas in case it didn't work or in case I wanted to get out. And I think I asked the ladies who do our branding, who are actually my best friends, AM Branding, to come up with names. And I think they must have come up with like 40 names. And they kept saying, this is not it. You're going to call it Tashas. I'm like, I don't want to. So we landed on the name Tashas, opened, and again, very blessed, super busy from day one. Mm. And in fact, I was going to go back and study further because I did my BA in psychology and I thought, well, I'll open this cafe and I'll go back and study further. But it was so busy from day one that idea went out the window. Started opening a few more. And I'll give you the short version. Went into partnership with a big corporate, a public listed company. A very unlikely partnership because they are all about mass brands and big footprint brands. Was a little bit of swimming upstream. I was in partnership with them for 12 years, but I am very passionate about what I do. They wanted me to open 50. And I said, guys, this is not that type of brand. I don't want to scale in that way. I want to keep it boutique. I want it to be small. I want it to be manageable. I said, we're going to open maximum 20. We've landed on 17. And then during COVID, I bought my business back, which I would say is my most proud moment.
Wow, good for you.
I did. I bought the entire business back. So my brother and I own the business ourselves. We have another partner who's a mentor, has a small share in the business, who's helped us grow it. Since the divorce, and I mustn't call it a divorce, but since we bought Famous Brands out, we've been able to create a number of brands. So we've got Flamingo Room. We've got Galaxy Bar, which is in world's top 50. We ranked number 45. We've just opened a new bar called Perlage. We've got Bungalow 34, African Lounge. We have a number of concepts. And I think being within the confines of a very corporate business who's got a narrow mindset around food and is mainly about large footprints and big scaling, you're unable to realize your creative vision. So yep. I count myself very blessed to have been able to buy them out.
Yeah, that's incredible. So you established yourself in South Africa.
Yeah.
What drew you to the Middle East?
So I had been approached to open in a couple of places, United States, the UK, Australia.
Mm. Approached by who?
Lots of people. So whoever had come to visit South Africa and said, well, we love your brand. We want to take it to Oz.
People who
we
want to franchise it.
They wanted to franchise it. Because I'm a control freak, Australia, definitely not. It's on the other side of the world. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I joke, I hope I'm not going to offend you on Australian town, but I say it's not even on planet Earth.
It's just so far.
Somewhere else.
So far away.
The United States also far away. You can't just jump on a plane and deal with an issue. The UK I was petrified of.
I'm so intrigued, sorry, that you're more scared of the UK than of
America.
Dubai. No, than of America. Well, yeah, Dubai.
Well, America, because it was just too far away.
So it eliminated.
But, the two choices were, do we go into the UK or do we go to Dubai? Dubai... 8-hour flight away. similar, and people get surprised when I say this, but quite a similar culture to South Africa because it's a driving culture. It's a mall culture.
Yeah, I get that.
It's quite different. Very easy to do business. No shortage of staff. No restrictions on who can work for you and who can't work for you. I was able to bring, which I think the biggest threat to a company's growth is culture and training. I was able to bring over 30 South Africans.
It's amazing.
For my first store in Dubai. Mm. I wouldn't really have been able to do that in the UK. So it made more sense to open in Dubai as the first one. And that's when the journey began. So that's, we've been in Dubai for 10 years.
And you expanded because you just had an appetite for more? Like what? Why?
I'm a sucker
why
for
more?
Punishment.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it is a question that I ask myself sometimes and I'm very stressed. I think there's two things. I am extremely ambitious and highly competitive, and I always have been. I used to swim for my province and I'm a head girl at my school and extremely academic. So I think on a personal level, it's the ambition and the drive. I want to push myself to see what else I can do. Mm-hmm. Now it's because I think we've opened 10 different brands and we have scaled to the extent that we have. Now it's more about what can I do for the people who have supported me along the way? Mm-hmm. How can I give back to the people who've helped me grow this business and leave a legacy behind? Mm-hmm. And that's really what the focus is now, is scaling and then to be able to share what we've built.
So the first restaurant in Dubai was?
First restaurant in Dubai was Atasha's, and that's always the first market entry.
Got it. Makes sense.
You always go with Atasha's.
Okay.
That opened 10 years ago. And then we opened Flamingo Room, I think 5 years in. Mm-hmm. And since then, we've opened all of the other brands. Mm-hmm. We've most recently opened in Saudi. A Flamingo Room, a huge Flamingo collection in Abu Dhabi, which is a retail store called Collective Africa, and the new bar called Pelage.
Okay.
I mean, I can't believe that I'm sitting in London and we opened it a week ago, which just shows how the team has grown. Although I'm still micromanaging them, as you saw when I walked in.
Are you able to let go? Are you able as you grow to, not one bit? No.
No.
It's your baby.
I mean, I say that. That's not fair. I have let go to an extent. Had I not, I would have staggered the openings more. So we've had one opening literally on top of another.
Sure.
So in that regard, I have let go, but I'm on top of the micro detail every day. I think I drive my team totally insane. Listen, at some point it's going to get to a, I think the book's called Blitzscaling, where the founders of Airbnb talk about doing what they do until they couldn't do it anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm at that phase where I'm going to be at every opening for as long as I can. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to taste every dish for as long as I can. Mm-hmm. And of course, it's going to get to a point where I might not be able to be at an opening. I might have to trust someone else to open the restaurant without me. But until that time, to bug them.
You're still there. I've got another question. It's just on the Middle East and any cultural differences in opening up there. Obviously, it has its own culture. You mentioned before that there was kind of some similarities between the Middle East and South Africa.
Exactly.
You can kind of see the similarities. But were there any things you didn't know before that you had to navigate in opening in an entirely different place?
I'm the type of person that goes into a situation without overthinking it too much. It was the same when people asked me about being a woman in a male-led industry. Mm. I tried not to think about that too much because then it gets in the way. It was the same with Dubai. We tried not to overthink what the culture differences were going to be. Of course, we tweaked the menu slightly, as we've done here. But no, I think Dubai has welcomed us with open arms. It's my home away from home. We are well-loved by expats and locals. And I would say the only big difference, of course, in the cafes is that we don't serve liquor. In all the concept stores, we do. But other than that, no.
Mm, not at all. Talk to me about, you know, you mentioned that in part of the original concept of the first Ashes was always about it looking beautiful. The aesthetics were so important.
Very important.
You know, if people are listening and they haven't seen your restaurants, what is your style? How do you approach the interiors? Okay. Because they are pretty unique.
Thank you. So for Tasha specifically, we wanted an aesthetic that was what I call light, bright, easy, breezy. Mm-hmm. And I think for the UK, that's going to be quite unusual because when I look at the interiors, and there's some beautiful interiors in the UK that we look to for inspiration for some of our other stores, there is quite a distinct bistro feeling. They're quite dark and moody. Mm. There is that aesthetic. Mm-hmm. Ours is completely different. It's, as I said, very light, very bright, very breezy. It's a very simple interior. So we've got this chocolate brown, espresso brown dado that runs along the walls, curved ceilings with a stucco. We've always got an unusual pattern in the floors. I'd say they're quite warm. And then we've got an installation that hangs on the ceiling. They transition beautifully from day into night.
Mm-hmm.
Go for your breakfast, and then you can still come for a dinner, and it's nice and sexy and moody. You'll have to come and see.
I was just thinking.
You will have to get myself down there.
Yeah.
For Tasha's, it is quite a simplistic design, but when you start to look around, you'll notice all the small details.
Mm-hmm. And the rest of them. That's Tasha's.
That's
how
Tasha's.
Do you, I mean, Georgie and I were having a little flick through yesterday. She was showing me all your Dubai restaurants in particular. And I mean, they are stunning. They are so beautiful.
With a very talented team.
Mm.
Nadine Buck and Devold Strovach. So they're husband and wife. Their studio is called Vahal.
Mm-hmm.
And we have been working together almost since the beginning.
Mm.
Nadine has designed I think we'll be at 40 restaurants by the end of next year. She didn't design the first three. Mm-hmm. And every one after that she's designed.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a unique ability to take my idea and turn that into a reality. And then I work closely with them, and we have design meetings every week, and we'll flip through magazines. I'm still a magazine girl.
Me too.
But they are very, very talented. And what's unique about them is most interior designers have got a certain style.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll be able to identify their style across a number of brands and across a number of restaurants. I think what Vahal does really well is that they are able to morph, and they don't have any particular style. You're not going to recognize it as a Vahal studio design, which I think is more important than being able to recognize the design. So, for example, Bungalow 34, I said to them, I want something nostalgic. I want it to be reminiscent of the Rivieras. It's got to have a little bit of retro cool, but not forced.
Mm.
You know, like everyone's doing that Aaron Slim design. Mm-hmm. And I think what they do is that it feels authentic.
Mm.
And then they go away and they create the magic. They bring it to me. We'll tweak certain things. And
how do you come up with the concept? You know, if you're, you know, you're looking at a location and you think, right, we're going to open a spot here.
Yeah.
Is it based on market research?
No.
Is it a feeling from you?
It's all gut. Mm. So we don't do any market research, and I never have. In fact, I've hardly ever written a business plan.
Good for you.
I remember walking into my first corporate meeting at Famous Brands, and everyone was looking at me. They're like, something must be very wrong with me. Anyway, I got up off my chair and I still had my apron on.
Love that. Authentic.
I don't know how to read an income statement or a balance sheet or to do a business plan. I've learned now and I've grown. But we've operated the business from gut. If you ask me about concepts, about 8 years ago, I said to my team, do not come to me. I'm not creating another concept. But because you can't put a Tasha's everywhere, you're going to oversaturate the market and you're going to destroy the brand.
Mm-hmm.
We've been offered various locations, and based on the location, I'll look at the location and think, this could work for a beach style restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
Or we were offered the space in Saudi Arabia, 2-story building, flamingo room at the bottom. What are we going to do with the top space? It's not going to work as a flamingo room. No one's really done an African concept with small bites in a tented safari-like feel, nature all around us. It is an amazing precinct. Came up with the African lounge. So it's site dependent.
What is the thread that might not be apparent to the naked eye?
The golden thread.
That pulls them all together then, if they're all so unique.
Wow. I would say that we make all our food on order.
Mm-hmm.
So very, I don't know how that's going to work here, because I'm told that it's not going to work.
What does that mean exactly for those who don't?
So there's very little mise en place in our restaurants. Our food's made fresh on order. So if you come to Tasha's next week, which I hope you will, and you order.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Fruit salad, we're going to cut your fruit for you on order.
Mm-hmm.
There's no chicken piled up in the background for your chicken salad.
Which is really nice to hear.
Yeah, because I think, because of labor, I understand that there's got to be an element of mise en place. So that's one of the things. In terms of golden thread of the interiors, there isn't really, because all of the interiors are so different. I think it's just a really quality build. Mm. And then last and finally and most importantly is the way we take care of our staff and the way we look after our people. I mean, I've got some people who've been working for me, even pre-Tashas. Mm-hmm. One of the ladies who's in the bar in Battersea has been with me from the day I opened Tashas.
Love that.
It's 18 years. Mm. And I'm hoping that the youth here are going to realize that we're an employer of choice, mm-hmm. that we do look after our people, we pay well, mm. we're not sticklers about leave. Mm. You know, we want to create a sense of community. And I think that's another thing that runs through. We've got a real sense of hospitality. Mm. I think restaurateurs today, not all, but a lot of people are in the food industry, see it as a means to an end. Mm. It's all about scaling, big numbers. And I think we've lost the essence of what it means to be a restaurateur. Mm. What does it mean? You've got to serve people with hospitality, welcome them into your space as if it's your home, give them great food. If you've made a mistake, fix it, try and make it right, and then give them this beautiful space to sit in. It's not all about mash roll out of numbers. And then also not the sense of apathy where sort of slapdash. And I think the food, the people element is very, very important. It's going to be our biggest challenge. Yeah. Mm. Can we make a good plate of food? Yes, we can. Have we built a beautiful restaurant? I'd like to think so. The people aspect is going to be particularly tough because I do get a sense of a lackluster, sort of defeated attitude within hospitality. And I'd like to think that when people join us, they can make a career. I mean, I've got a lady called, and I keep using her as an example, Precious. She started with me as a scullery in South Africa. She's now the general manager of one of the busiest restaurants that I own in Dubai. So I would like to try and change the narrative here in the UK around what it means to be employed. In hospitality and what that can mean for you in terms of a career.
I hope there's appetite for that because I think there is amongst London anyway, customers. Mm-hmm. Like I think that apathy and that fatigue within hospitality, yes. we feel it.
You feel it when you go into restaurants.
Yes, totally. Like,
throw the plate of food down.
Totally.
A total disinterest.
Yes, but I think you're right that comes from the top. I think it comes from a kind of cynicism that has emerged in British business kind of as a whole and I don't know, exhaustion with it all. I think, you know, some fresh blood from overseas is probably exactly what we need.
Let's see. I hope so. Listen, we've employed a lot of people from the UK because we've wanted to, but also we've got Brexit that we've got to deal with. We can't bring a lot of South Africans.
Yeah.
And we're going to have to teach that culture and that DNA. Mm. It's one of the reasons I'm spending a lot of time here. So I'm going to be here till the 25th, pop over to Saudi for a day or two. Then I come back on the 4th. Yeah, till the 11th or 12th. I come back for 2 weeks in Jan. And then I've got Kyle, who's running that restaurant. And then I've got a lady called Fatima, who worked for me in Dubai for ages. I've got a guy called Alan, who's also helping run the restaurant. He used to own his own Tashas in Cape Town.
Okay. Oh, wow.
And he sold that store to move to the UK, and he's helping us run the restaurant. So we've got our team.
You've got
a loyal,
sounds like.
We team. Do. Mm-hmm. And I hope that they're going to be able to imbue that spirit onto the rest of the...
Mm. How actively have you sought to be the kind of leader who garners that kind of loyalty? The passion that's so obvious in you that has obviously kept people sticking around. Has that been an active leadership choice or
it's come naturally?
It's just who you are.
It has come naturally. Mm. And I think because it's come naturally, it's authentic. Mm. And that's why people want to work for us. It's not like a corporate structure. Well, let's behave in this way and then we'll get this type of behavior back. No, it's all from the heart.
Are there any active leadership choices you have made?
Wow, that's a very good question. I have to say no, it's all come naturally.
Just who you are.
It has just happened organically. I've had to actively make a choice to learn more about structure and the corporate world because I can't be a CEO who's just a creative. Mm-hmm. So I would say maybe that's the main thing is to say, I've had to learn how to put process into the business. It's not something that comes naturally to me. I can put process into a restaurant, but to put process into a business, we've got 40 people working at head office. And then I think learning to trust those people at head office to be able to make mistakes, that hasn't been an easy one for me, but it's something that I am working on actively and I've had to work on because people are not going to do it right all the time. No. I think the last two openings have been a big step forward for me. I would never, ever be sitting here. I have opened a beast of a restaurant. It's 1,500 squares. It's like a membership club without the membership fee in Abu Dhabi. And I was there a week before and a week after. which obviously shows that
the team
are doing something very right.
You're learning to let go.
Yeah, I'm learning to let go.
Can you talk to me about the retail concept that is in?
Sure.
Tell me how many restaurants is it?
So we have 4 of them inside our restaurants.
Yeah.
We have got Collective Africa in the Flamingo Room in Al Naseem. Yeah. That's where it started. We have one in Bungalow 34 with a different type of offering. One in Saudi, one in Abu Dhabi. We are in partnership with a lady called Nikki Gregg, and her husband owns a jewelry store in South Africa called Charles Gregg, and they're fifth generation jewelers. And one night in Johannesburg about 10 years ago, he had a space next to his jewelry store. And I said, guys, you know what? Why don't you make a really high end, non-typical African gift store where we can celebrate Africa in the most stylish way? Because we have some beautiful stuff in South Africa. And it's not the cliched, the masks and the ostrich eggs, the stuff that you would normally get. Anyway, we toiled around with the idea a little bit and started playing with the space. And I wasn't a partner in that business at all. And I helped them get it going. It was mainly all Nikki Gregg, who's a super talent, who's also our interior stylist. Then Flamingo Room. I got the location for Flamingo Room in Abu Dhabi, in Al Naseem, in Dubai. And we had a space that I didn't want to populate with more restaurant seating. So I called Nikki up and I said, listen, let's open a collective and put it in the space. Flamingo Room celebrates all things beautiful about Africa. And let's open a collective. And that was the beginning of the journey. So we now have those 4. Bungalow's got a slightly different aesthetic because it's at the beach. So we sell swimwear and more sunglasses and that type of thing. And then the others are, do a lot of Ardmores, who are the ceramicists that have done a full range for Hermes as well. We sell Donald Gregg sculptures, jewelry, candles, Africology, which is a whole range of beauty products.
It's from what I've seen. Again, Georgie was showing me all the pictures she took when she was there. It's a beautifully curated edit of lifestyle brands. I saw a little bit of Les Ottomans in there, I think. And, you know, the kind of brands, I mean, it's so Sherlock, but it's all our favorite things, but a little bit of everything. That kind of retail meets hospitality thing, I mean, I feel like there's a bit of that in Mykonos, but you don't really hear, it's quite unusual for cities.
It is unusual for cities, but I think it's a great reprieve and a pause for customers as well.
I think so too.
I don't want people to be on their phones all the time. So, you know, if there's an uncomfortable silence on the table, someone can go get up and go into a bit of a shop. A husband wants to spoil his wife. A friend wants to buy someone a gift. It's experiential and it's not in your face. So I think that's it's not forced. So you either walk through the space and if you want to buy something, great, or when you're walking out. And I think being able to shop and dine is a great thing.
It's the dream.
Yep.
All the best things in one. Talk to me about the food.
Yeah.
Across all of it. You talked a little bit about the ethos behind the food.
Yeah.
But what do you serve? What do you make?
So different restaurants serve different things. I'm Greek, as I said. Born in South Africa, proudly South African, but obviously my roots are Greek. So we've got our Greek restaurant of Lee. Again, not typical. What we try and do is add a small spin and a twist on it. However, all of our food is very simple. We want the ingredients to shine. It's not overly complicated. Although I love dining at Michelin and I love very fine and elevated dining, it isn't that style of food. It's much more accessible, a lot more relaxed. And then every brand has got its own type of cuisine. So at Bungalow 34, because we're on the beach and there's a bit of that nostalgic Italian Riviera feeling, we've got a lot more pastas. We've just built an amazing pizza oven. We've got stunning pizzas that come out of the oven. The Greek restaurant, of course, we've got the Greek food, African lounge now. We've got a guy called Stanley who's from Zimbabwe. I think it's the best food we're putting out at the moment in terms of the concept stores, these African nibbly bits. And then Tasha's is good, classic, cafe-style food. Of course, we've got the main courses in the evening. And the difference that we've put onto this one is we've done small plates. Because what I've noticed here is that a lot of people after work or on their way somewhere who are just going to meet someone for a glass of wine may not want to have a big meal. So we've included some of the smaller plates. But I think intrinsically, it's about the ingredients and then not overcomplicating the dishes. And that's our style of food across all of the restaurants.
Can you give us a flavor of what's to come at Battersea's particular? Just a dish or two that you're excited about.
Sure. We've got an unbelievable prawn pasta. Which is really delicious. In the morning, we do an eggs royale, which is not your typical Eggs Benedict, so it's a much lighter sauce. We've got our famous Texas salad on the menu. We focused on salads here.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone said to us that you guys don't like to eat a lot of salads.
Oh, how interesting.
But I don't think that's going to be true.
No, I think it's hard to find. Yeah.
I think it's hard to find a good salad in London.
So
we have got a big focus. We've got five or six really good salads
Great.
On the
I'm
menu.
Excited about that.
So
yes.
I think you're going to enjoy those. Mm. It's a well-rounded menu. I think there's something for everyone. Our beverage director, Christian, who's in charge of all our bars, has also done a really well-curated cocktail list. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Okay, I'm excited. I want to ask just a bit more about the career path, about work. You mentioned you had a mentor who is also a part of
the partner,
business.
Yeah. Yes, a partner. So I'd say my early mentor was my dad, mm-hmm. of course, who was an unbelievable restaurateur. Mm-hmm. So he died at the age of 57. Sadly, he's hardly seen what my brother and I have been able to do. But certainly his tenacity, never giving up, an unbelievable cook. I've got to be honest, I'm a restaurateur. My brother is a better cook than I am. Mm. I'm not a chef.
Mm.
I'm the conductor of the orchestra, bringing all the elements together. Mm. I have a great palate and I work with the chefs, but I'm not a chef per se. My dad was a great chef. And I think taught me everything I know about the industry. What my partner, Mike Nunn's been able to do is teach me about business. He's a maverick in the business industry. He knows a lot about the corporate side of the business, and I've been able to lean on him a lot throughout my career, even before he became a partner. And he's been an incredible advisor, and almost, for now I'm going to cry.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Almost like a stepped in as a father figure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, that's amazing. What's one piece of advice that you've had either from him or just in general about career that you have kind of always held?
So my dad's piece of advice, when he walked into the restaurant and he saw me completely flustered and irritated, and he said, come sit with me. What's going on? I said, I don't know how many times I have to repeat myself. He said, do you want to do this work? So I said, yes, I love it. He said, this is a business of repetition. And the sooner you accept that and you come to terms with that, the more you're going to enjoy it. You're going to have to repeat yourself. No 2 days are going to be the same. You're going to have staff coming and going. You have to be able to understand that it is a business of repetition, repeating the standards, repeating them, repeating them, repeating them. And I think what I've learned from Mike is not to let people who are more experienced than you in business try and steamroll you. He's given me unique skill and confidence to be able to show my grit and my teeth when I've needed to in a corporate world full of men and an industry that's mainly male driven. That's changing a lot now. There's a lot more females in the F&B, but those are the two things. And then in terms of business advice, are you saying for other people or?
That was going to be my next question. Okay. So yeah, tell me, what's the advice you always give people when they ask?
Guys, nothing comes easy. If you want to make a success, I mean, unless you're an inventor or you're in tech and you come up with Instagram as an idea, but even that, I promise
it's
you, wasn't
that
easy.
Yeah.
Even that wasn't easy for someone to do. The food industry is extremely challenging. You have to be able to pivot, but you also have to be able to accept that it is very, very hard work. But with the hard work comes reward. And my piece of advice to anyone who would want to get involved in the food business is to say, do you have the grit? Do you have the determination? And are you prepared to sacrifice? A lot of it comes with a lot of personal sacrifice. Mm. It's long hours.
Mm-hmm.
It's not being able to. I mean, my brother's kids are in South Africa and they're growing up so quickly, and maybe I see them twice a year. You have to really love what you do. And I think my piece of advice would be accept that it's going to be hard work.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that kind of applies for every industry, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah.
It does. I think the difference in hospitality is the number of variables.
Yeah, that's fair.
The variables that you have to juggle.
Mm.
You know, especially in a founder's position, someone who wants to open a restaurant, from the smallest restaurant down the street to a big business like ours, is there's a lot of variables.
We don't like to dwell too much on it, but speaking of variables, speaking of hospitality, I have to ask how you navigated the pandemic.
When it happened, I thought, oh my God, all of this hard work and now we're going to lose everything. That was my first reaction on the first day. On the second day, I said, right, we're going to work harder than we've ever worked before to save this business. I was in the restaurant, packing everything up, switching off all the fridges, going around, talking to the staff, reassuring them that everything was going to be okay. We were lucky that we built up a war chest, so we were able to keep all our staff employed.
That's amazing.
All the execs in the business took major haircuts. In fact, I didn't take any salary out of the business. I couldn't. And my brother as well.
And then you did that in order to keep everyone employed?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And then what we did is Dubai opened up and South Africa opened up with a takeaways. We had never, I never wanted to, up until that point, put my product in a delivery bag.
I mean, and so many didn't, right?
And like, I hadn't.
Yeah.
But then we had to pivot and I had to do it. Coming out of the pandemic, reopening, we need to try and simplify the business. And what we learned out of that, a huge lesson out of COVID, was we would have an army of staff before. We realized actually we don't need that many people. Mm. So we transferred some people to some of the new openings. Do we need such a big menu? No, we don't. We shrunk the menu. Do we need 10 cakes on the display? No, we don't. We need 3. In many ways, it was a good thing. It allowed us to like refocus and streamline the business. Mm-hmm. You know, sophisticated simplicity and just simplify a lot of the stuff that we were doing. We survived, and coming out of COVID, we've just been flourishing. We're very, very, very blessed. I'm extremely grateful.
Finally, I can't let you go without asking you. Yeah. I can never let a restaurateur go without asking where they like to eat, where they like to go. Where, when you're in London, where's on your hit list? Is there somewhere that you always go back to?
I'm an old fuddy-duddy girl.
Tell me.
I love going to Scott.
I mean, me too.
I love it.
I'm with you, yeah.
And the food's incredible. Mm-hmm. I love the new restaurant that's opened on Mount Street, the Mount Street restaurant. Mm-hmm. I'm in love with the interior.
Yeah, they're beautiful, yeah.
I love the food. Mm-hmm. For casual, I like to just pop into Harrods and sit at one of the counters and eat. Listen, I'm a tourist here. So maybe that'll be too touristy for some other
people.
They've
got excellent food there.
But they do have excellent food. I went to Zuma the other night for dinner. It's always a good one. Zuma's a solid one. Mm-hmm. I respect what they do. They are consistent.
They are.
Service is always good. Mm-hmm. Food's always good. I think Colbert does a good job on the corner. Mm-hmm. I think it's very nice. Mm-hmm. It's amazing to see that it's a new restaurant, but it feels that it's been there for forever.
It does.
I think they've done very cleverly. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a nice list. It's a nice list.
Yeah.
A little bit of London. Tasha, thank you so much.
I assume
by the time this has gone live, Tasha's in Battersea Power Station will be open. So,
hope so. No,
congratulations.
We're opening on Tuesday. We're going to open slowly, but we're opening.
Okay, yeah. Exactly that. So huge congratulations.
Can't wait
to see how it does. And
thank you very much. I look forward to welcoming you.
Thank you.
Taste some of our food. I'll make your salad.
Oh, yeah.
Good.
Can't wait. Give me a good salad any day of the week. Tasha, thank you so much. And thank you for listening. If you have any feedback at all, please do email podcast@sharelux.com. We love hearing from you. Don't forget to rate, review, subscribe, and tell your friends. And we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.